The Guardian.
The Guardian Football Weekly Extra podcast with James Richardson.
Time for another Football Weekly Extra, and on today's agenda, English dominance of Champions League in doubt. Three teams played, only one got a win. We review the midweek action, from Ronaldo scoring in Rome, but not at that curious backstreet agency, to Istanbul, where it's not just confused tourists who are saying, is this really the boss for us? We get the latest on Sid Lowe and his brave battle with man flu, discuss the impact of Phil Neville's mansion on an already fragile housing market, and catch up with the Champions League South American star with freewheeling Fernando Duarte. All that plus post on Football Weekly Extra.
This is Guardian Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Well, in the pod today, and half of you actually have to get to an exciting lunch somewhere. We've got Matt Scott. Welcome back, Matt. The microphone's this big thing. That, yeah. Hi, Matt.
Hi, James.
Who are you having lunch with today?
The head of performance of UK Sport.
Peter Keane.
Oh, right.
I spoke to him last year and he said that it was still possible.
This is Sean Ingle, by the way.
Yeah, so it's still possible for, you know, someone that isn't particularly athletic to compete in London 2012. So since then, I've been doing my press-ups and my bicycle kicks, but I'm still...
Hey, you are athletic. Sean Ingle, you live on wheat germ and stuff.
Possibly.
Oh, anyway, he does. Listen. Kevin McCarra.
Who is not going to the lunch because I'm just not important enough.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry to hear that. You can stay here.
Tragic, yes.
Pod with
I've
us,
been
Kevin.
Sent here instead. That's right. That's demoted.
And Barry Glendening.
I'm not going to the lunch either.
Because you don't want to.
I wasn't invited.
Oh, really?
I would be worried if Sean Ingle entered the Olympics because I'd be pretty certain going on all the tubs of whey and stuff that he has near his desk that he would fail any drugs test he was made take.
Why in creatine? A perfect legal Barry
He has all these tubs with big blokes who quite clearly take steroids on the front.
Does he collect the labels or not?
I don't know.
All right, okay.
Why do you do this, Sean?
I like to work out. I'm going to get an absolute hammering on the blogs here. But James does Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with Madonna's
assistant.
I don't do it with her son.
Standing and taking whey powder as supplements is not...
I think if you do exercise, you have to have a certain amount of protein, and people argue over it.
He has low self-esteem.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Well, there you go. Five people in the pod, and we'll be shedding them apprentice style along the way. And so let's get straight into the action. Arsenal-Liverpool, then. Is that where we're going to begin? Kevin, were you there at the Emirates last night?
I certainly was.
Right.
I was amazed there was mistakes and things happening. The game disobeying the will of two managers. So excellent.
It was all rather entertaining. And the result, a draw, Liverpool with the advantage of an away goal. Mm. But Arsenal feeling aggrieved by the rather mysterious failure to award them what seemed a clear penalty.
Yeah, it's amazing that clearly there's a pull in the left arm of Leb. But I think referees often accept a degree of manhandling. Oh, it wasn't much, etc. A foul's a foul. But you do see people using their arms and hands in the penalty area and it being ignored.
If that was in the halfway line, it would have been a foul.
Yeah, they apply a different rule, don't they?
They do. But I don't think we should get carried away about last night's game. I mean, it was all
was
right.
Fun.
It was much better than expected. But it was almost like having been taken, by your rom-com loving partner to watch Runaway Bride, She's the One, Made in Manhattan, and absolutely anything by Richard Curtis. You were then taken to see Juno, of Barry's favourites. It's not bad,
Why I enjoyed it in an era when we were talking about English club dominating the Champions League, which they are, they looked like two kind of moderate error-ridden teams playing each other last night. It didn't seem like the elite. It was quite funny in that sense,
Arsenal missed a bunch of chances, though, and they've now got Van Persie injured. How serious is that going to be for them?
Well, they're used to it. they're accustomed to having
somebody told me he's played in 4 years, and I haven't checked this, and it was apocryphal, man in the pub, quite literally man in the pub stuff after the game, but he said he started 34 games in 4 years for Arsenal, which is shocking. I mean, he is such a good talent, arguably the best goal scorer in the Premier League, but has not played.
Well, it's very interesting to compare Van Persie and also Arjen Robben, who 4 years ago, both of which were supposed to be world class talents, and both have had horrible problems. I mean, I remember Robben at Euro 2004 being sensational, and those first few months at Chelsea, and had too many injuries.
I think too, Matt, you would agree that Van Persie, even though he has been playing, still hasn't been fully fit, really.
No, not at all. And Wenger's trying to get him back in gently. I mean, Robben though is a bit of a different kettle of fish. I've got a bit of a theory theory about Robin. Jose Mourinho got so frustrated with the lack of... I was going to say balls of the man, but you'll see why I'm not going to say that as I go on. But the lack of courage, apparently, when comparing him with John Terry, because he felt that, you know, he wasn't going to get involved in any of the revolutionary attempts that they had for getting him back to fitness quickly. And he was always never declared himself fit until he felt absolutely 100%. But I got a bit of a theory that that's due to the fact that when he was a lot younger, still in his teens, he had testicular cancer. Mm. And I think that he is really concerned about his long-term health. Chelsea had the controversial blood-spinning technique that they were using, and he would have none of it. In the end, Jose Mourinho built a sand pit for him to do it the old-fashioned way, get himself back to fitness when he had an ankle injury. So I don't know that Robin van Persie is quite as fragile as Robin in comparison to most footballers.
Can I mention that I once had the pleasure of waiting 4 hours to interview Arjen Robin, and he was kind of monosyllabic when he eventually deigned to arrive. But the only thing that got him going is that in desperation I said to him, do you feel that in terms of fitness it's different from a centre-half getting through a game to a winger who has to go past people and show a different kind of athleticism? And suddenly he perked up and said, well, yes, you know, I mean, speed and so on is that you might not be fit enough to do what you want to do in the pitch and to do your part in the game.
Oh, there you go.
Now.
And how do we end up talking about Chelsea players?
Sorry, back to the rom-coms, Sean.
No, at all. I mean, it's quite interesting as well that it's coming out today that, you know, Dirk Kuyt knows the referee.
Dirk Kuyt scored a goal.
He scored a goal, and played well. You know, we've often...
And he knew,
very good right-back. Very good right-back.
This business that a not-to-be-named TV station was pointing out during their coverage that Dirk Kuyt was born 5 miles away from where the referee was born.
I think you'll find it was kilometres.
I was born, you know, just 5 kilometres away from lots of people I don't like, so I don't think that should really be an issue. isn't it interesting that the day after Dirk Kuyt scores a goal, Paul Doyle is conspicuous by his absence from the pod.
Yeah. Well, Kevin's another hater.
Well, I just think he was somewhat overpriced, shall we say. Okay. I'd like a guy who could run for that amount of money.
Right. I'd just like to return to the point about him being a right back. There were 10 right backs in the Liverpool team.
He was the best of them.
They were miserable. They were miserable. I was there as well.
You didn't enjoy it.
Oh, they were miserable. I can understand when clubs like Middlesbrough and, you know, Wigan Athletic and Birmingham. So actually, Birmingham played a game, but, you know, those kind of teams, Manchester City, want to go to the Emirates Stadium and defend. When Liverpool do it, I find it a little unsettling.
But
this
did
is
the
ends a Champions League quarter final.
The ends justify the means, though?
Not at all. I mean, I still think they'll get beaten and justice will be done. I thought it was dreadful.
Really, you Rafa think Benitez can go to?
So one-dimensional.
But you're only saying that because of the whole Guardian anti-Liverpool conspiracy. You're bitter. You don't appreciate the 50 years of tradition and the fact that Liverpool's fans are really, really special.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have their say, obviously, and I think that it's going to be tough for Arsenal mentally. You know, I think this will be a real test of their supposed mental fragility, but I can still see... at the end of the day, Arsenal are a goal-scoring team, and, you know, it actually helps them to score. If they go and attack Liverpool they were a lot more open last night than I had any expectation of them, having seen them against Milan at home. I thought that they were going to be a lot tighter and a lot more cagey, but because they would expect the away goal to get them through as they did against Milan, but I still think they'll score twice.
Well, what about now they're going to face each other on the weekend as well, which must be an interesting thing for the managers to try and get their heads around how to approach each individual game. Do you think it's going to be any less cagey from Liverpool this time? Back at the Emirates.
No? I'd love to see how many he rotates this time. This is the man who went 99 games without naming a settled lineup. I mean, he will be... Jermaine Pennant is bound to get a run. Is he fit? He's bound to get a run.
Harry Kewell would be...
I think Ben Ayoun will start, won't he?
Yeah, you know, of course,
Voronin might start.
Yeah, exactly. I think they'll get humped.
I'm getting quite excited. I haven't seen Voronin start a game for a long, long time. You know, it'll be a treat.
No, he's been injured, but I
didn't actually see the Arsenal the only reason. Game the other night, because I was watching the other side to see Fenerbahce Chelsea, because Fernando got me so excited about Ferner that I couldn't miss this opportunity, and I was richly rewarded for my endeavour, because it was a fascinating encounter, and one which obviously left Chelsea shaking their collective heads as they came off the field after the comeback inspired by the Coca-Cola kid himself.
Colin Kazim Richards.
Indeed.
Mm. Who has changed his name to Colin Kazim Kazim.
Well, it's Kazim Kazim on the back of his shirt, but apparently that's, I don't know if that's...
I think it's just to fit in more in his
Is it true he's got a turkey cap? I didn't know that. He's been capped for Turkey, apparently.
I don't know. He's certainly eligible to play for them. His mum is a Turk Cypriot.
Right. Well, there you go. He has, I believe, been called up and indeed played for them.
But
and
wasn't he sensational?
He was sensational, yes.
Chelsea dominated for the first hour. Should have
On the back of a fairly spectacularly unlucky own goal.
Yeah.
Which obviously put them in the driving seat.
Shortly after that own goal, Essien rattled a crossbar. There were other couple of good saves from the Fenerbahce keeper. And then at 60 minutes, Zico sent on Kazim Richards. And shortly afterwards, he sent on Senturk Semi for Kesman, I think it was, who was having a shocker. And they just changed the game completely. Four players up front. Two of them and David, who scored the own goal, and Alex were sensational. And they thoroughly deserved their win in the end.
It's interesting that the game against Sevilla had this thing of the villain going from villain, or sorry, a player going from villain to hero. In that case, it was the goalkeeper. And yesterday, it was David who conceded the early goal and then scored an absolutely astonishing winner.
35-yard screamer into the top corner.
Mm. And it was, you couldn't say, really, that they didn't deserve it.
No, but if someone had asked you after 60 minutes, you know, who's going to win this game, you would have put your mortgage on Chelsea. Like, they were totally dominant. I'd say they couldn't believe they lost.
No wonder there are 3 million people in negative equity.
they're still favourites to go through, though, presumably, with that away goal.
Yeah, but I wouldn't, again, I wouldn't put the house on it.
Right, all right.
Fenerbahce are a very good team. I think they'll probably start with Semi and Kazim Richard leg.
Well done to Zico. I have to say that one thing we'd heard about Fenerbahce was that they had an absolute rubbish defence. I didn't see that last night at all.
No.
So there you go. Well,
they have quite a rubbish midfield. Their midfield was totally overrun in the first hour. But if they go to Stamford Bridge and just tear into Chelsea, they have a very, very good chance of beating them.
James, how unhappy was Lampard? Did you?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say whether he was unhappy at the substitution or unhappy at the scoreline. Because when he came off, they were losing, I think.
I didn't think it was a hissy fit. I think it was more bugger this, you know, disappointed.
He's not one for that, to be perfectly honest. This is a man who's been booed by the 90,000 crowd at Wembley. And he was very, not sanguine, but very, he had equanimity about him when he came off. So I don't think that Frank's that sort of man.
For any of the slower listeners at the back who don't know why Kazim Richards is known as the Coca-Cola kid, who wants to tell the story?
I can tell it.
Oh, right, you go, Barry.
Some Brighton fan won a Coca-Cola run competition where winning £250,000 for his club to use as a transfer kitty, and they used the money to buy Kazim Richards from Bury, I think it was. And he went to Brighton, they got relegated, he went to Sheffield United, scored one goal last season. Zico bought him, I think, because in Turkey you have to have a certain number of Turkish players on your side, so that's why Zico bought him, I think. And he's been, last night was only his second goal of the season, which is one more than he scored for Sheffield last season, but obviously I haven't seen any of the games he's played in, but he was brilliant last night when he came off the bench.
Tell Fenerbahce that they can buy Kemi, is it, from Colchester for only £4 million if they
plus wrinkles as well, I think,
and some wrinkles.
Now, one other game we should address in part one: Roma, Man United, but not much to see here. Let's move on.
Well, I thought it was a strange game because up till the first goal, I thought, you know, Roma had the slight advantage. Look, see the goal. Start of second half, I thought it was all Roma. Without, you know, they had a couple of half chances.
They enjoyed plenty of possession, but they never really looked dangerous.
They missed Totti kind of drifting in
and
between
Tarotta.
The mid. Yeah,
because the thing was they had chances, but there was never anybody running into the box to meet them. I think Vucinic put this inviting ball across the face of goal, and it was a disappointing performance by Roma.
I was actually in a mood to repent my match report because I was a bit snippy about Man U, saying, well, you know, Roma had chances and it could have been different. But actually, when you think about it, this is an English team going to Italy, playing a team second in Serie A, and I'm grumbling because they didn't win controlling the entire game for 90 minutes.
Well, of course,
but it shows you what we now think about Serie A, that Manchester United should win as a matter of course.
Well, when
and
you
that,
look
that's
at
a
the,
big change.
When you look at the stats, what is it, five games against English clubs this year in the Premier League? In the Champions League, and the Serie A clubs have yet to score a single goal.
It's a reversal in the 1990s, isn't it, when the Italian teams always came out on top in the...
Well, it is this year. Vidic getting injured, though. Again, I think he's out for 3 weeks, though. How much is that going to hurt Man United? Title running, etc.
Well, the interesting thing is, do they do it at the midweek, which keep put O'Shea in the middle? I thought they would switch Brown to middle and play O'Shea at right back, but in a kind of bold and dangerous step, he put O'Shea into the centre.
But O'Shea...
But my last point is this. Gary Neville has been playing a number of reserve games. games, is he now fit enough to play right
back?
Well,
he said he wasn't, didn't he, a couple of
weeks
ago?
Well, he wants to come back next season.
Yeah, but he also didn't fancy his chances of getting back in. I don't really know what the reality of it is.
Wes Brown gives you more going forward than John O'Shea. I mean, O'Shea, in his first season, when he played on left, was often make these rampaging runs.
But that's my point again. You're away to Roma, and you're thinking, I must keep Wes Brown at right back because we want to attack them.
I think Gary Neville will never show his face again after everybody sees the pictures of his brother's house. I think he will be getting rid of his name, and this is a man who survived his dad being called Neville.
If people want to see pictures, interested parties, for example, of Phil Neville's house, where should they go?
Because they'll be on theguardian.co.uk.
Are you putting them up?
Astonishing.
It's like Versailles.
They're having trouble selling the house, and we want to do our bit.
Did they buy it off Saddam Hussein or something?
Don't know.
It's actually a postmodern joke. Having their initials in wrought iron in the gates, him and his wife, can only be a joke, surely.
Have you seen the carpet?
No, it's not!
I'm kidding.
The thing is, they have P and J on the gates, which means Paul Jewell could now buy it. And he's going to need a house soon after what happened in the news of the world a couple of weeks ago. Or Finn Jagielka could buy it. Nice teammate. Yes. Or you could buy it, Jimbo, and it'd just be podcasting's Jimbo.
All right, then. But I think we should say as well that we were looking at these pictures, which are astonishing, Versace decorated, gold everywhere, and all of us were, you know, saying how appalled we were, except Barry, who thought they were quite
I thought it wasn't that bad. All right, you've got the ceiling, which is sort of...
Barry.
It's ornate.
Stop
it's
already.
It's gold.
It's like Versailles.
Gold trim. It looks like an upside-down wedding cake. Yes. But apart from that,
there's a kind of gold stalactites hanging down from the ceiling.
I mean, the living room's okay. Nice big telly, the gate.
Does she come with the... Oh, no, it's good.
The living room's okay.
Wow, look at this.
It looks like the inside of a
For me, the worst moment was
disgusting.
The...
What about the bar? I think
he's got a nice bar. He's got video games.
Didn't
What's
that
wrong with that?
Didn't they have a bar like that in Minder years ago?
Look at that. Nice grand piano. Apart from the actual ceiling, which does look like an upside-down birthday or wedding cake.
It's the bedroom. Have you got a picture of the bedroom there with the carpet? You get some nasty burns on that. That's for sure. It's
very... Ooh!
We've been there before with Barry.
It's anyway, let's move on.
I say it's nicer than my house.
Well, I doubt
and
that,
I'll happily swap
I
with
really
him.
Doubt that. More expensive, perhaps.
Now, we were talking about a negative equity earlier. How did he spend 600 grand and get £4 million after doing that makeover? What would Carol
That's
Watts
the thing, he hasn't
say?
Got 4
million. He hasn't got 4 million pounds. He's trying to get 4 million pounds. Yes, yeah.
Let's not give it to him, hey listeners. Well, in part two, we're going to be tackling the other Champions League quarterfinal this week. Of course, Schalke Barcelona, with the help of Sid Lowe, assuming the virus hasn't consumed him since our last conversation. We'll also be having a look through some posts and I think having a chat with Fernando Duarte. See you in a second. Right, well, Sid Lowe will be coming up shortly, as well as all sorts of other excitement too. But first up, it's the turn of lucky listener, Fernando Duarte. Fernando, how are you?
I'm fine, James, I'm fine. It's good to be back, you know.
Yes.
Saying warm hello from Rio de Janeiro, man.
Ah, the only kind there is. You're a lucky fellow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's good to be back to my spiritual home, to be honest. So
good.
Good.
Right, now, speaking of, I was going to say spiritual homes, but you're very attached to Fenerbahce these days. Were you excited at their thrilling victory over Chelsea?
I was really delighted. I mean, I was really happy for what happened yesterday, not only because I think Chelsea is one of the most boring teams ever to step on a football field, but also because it's always good to see, you know, David kicking Golias stones or something like that. And I think they did a great job yesterday. You know, good second half and all the kind of emotion that you expect from a football match.
Right.
Really happy to see, giant killing or at least giant injuries.
It was David v. Goliath, wasn't it? David won, Fernando.
And I was going to add that because, you know, the Messiah is the Fenerbahce's manager. So, you know, I'm a devout of Zico. In my house, Christmas is celebrated on March the 3rd.
Which is Zico's birthday for any slow of yours. Yeah. Okay, good. So, good for him. And is David a famous player, or had you guys heard of him before this or not?
Yeah, he had a very prolific career in Brazil. He was part of the Cruzeiro team that in 2003 won everything that could be won in Brazil. They won the Brazilian League, the Campeonato Mineiro, because they're from the state of Minas Gerais, and they also won the Brazilian Cup. David has played also for Santos and Corinthians as well. So he had a bit of a cult following around here. He used to score a couple of goals. Also played for Bordeaux and in France. You know, it's a player that people knew.
Oh, okay,
and,
cool.
And people kind of thought, oh, yeah, he's going to do well in Turkey because he used to score a lot of goals. But I think nobody expected expected him to hit that screamer yesterday, to be honest.
No, he did not. But it was an absolutely astonishing goal. You mentioned Cruzeiro. Because having a quick look at the Copa Libertadores, which is the kind of Champions League of South America, as you're probably aware, the Brazilian sides are doing pretty well. Cruzeiro, they're top of their group. And who else has been doing it? Santos. I saw they had a 7-0 victory.
Yeah, and Santos also presents a very strong case against the altitude thing, right? Where a few weeks ago, they played against a team called San Jose from Bolivia. They played in a city called Oruro, which is like more than 3,000 meters above sea level. They lost 2-1 there. The players were actually spitting their lungs around the pitch, etc. And 2 days ago, they hosted this team in Santos, sea level, and they thrashed them 7-0. So Coach Leão, I mean, their manager, just said, listen, if this is not a case to show that altitude has an influence on the results, I think nothing else is. I think it's CONMEBOL, our version of UEFA, is discussing if they should implement FIFA's ban on matches in altitude for the Libertadores Cup as well. So far, the law kind of only applies this for like international matches, for national team matches. And some clubs are saying, look, this should be also be implemented for club matches. And there's this huge commotion about that. The Brazilian sides, of course, are not pleased at all to play in the altitude. Flamengo will have to play a vital match in the Libertadores Cup against Cienciano.
But the thing is, Fernando, does that mean that clubs would have to close down whose home games were at altitude? They'd have to abandon their town or whatever and move somewhere else because they could never play again?
I know. I'm not defending this. I'm just saying that this is becoming like a huge issue here.
Yes, of course.
When the decision was published by FIFA, I went on CNN to discuss this with some people, including the Bolivian ambassador, and I said, I'm not worried about the national teams. I'm worried about what's going to happen with the clubs. Because in Bolivia, for example, I think more than half of the first division teams are playing in the altitude. I just think that some studies need to be done. If it's proved that for this might injury a player or something like that, maybe you should have some reservations. But I've never seen a player dying of altitude exhaustion. But I've seen players die of heat exhaustion, for example.
Yeah.
Perhaps playing in Rio at 40 degrees is as lethal as playing Cusco at 4,000 meters. I don't know.
That's a fair shot. And Fluminense, another of these Brazilian sides, doing very, very well with Thiago Neves, who we're beginning to hear things about over here. You're beginning to hear about big clubs looking to maybe bring him over. Is he going to be the next big thing from Brazil?
People have been talking a lot about him. I think it should be early. He's not Pato, for sure. He's not like a Diego. But he could be a good player to be around. He's a very talented player. You know, he's bossing the Rio Championship. But I still want to see him play more for the national team, see how he goes. I mean, he's got a good chance in the Olympics. He's one of the players that people are touting to be part of the Olympic squad. And that's a very, very good shopping window sometimes for players. By the way, Fluminense yesterday, for the first time ever, they actually negotiated their passage through the group stages of Libertadores, which is something very happy for their supporters here in Rio.
So it's knockout from here on in after they finish the group stage, yeah?
Yeah. They already guaranteed place in the knockout. And the thing is, the way things are going now, you could have all the Brazilian teams, all the five Brazilian teams, and perhaps five or the six Argentine teams in the second phase. So this is going to be great, you know.
Right.
It's going to be really good.
And, well, there you go, Fernando. Adriano, meanwhile, doing very well, and I believe that he's back to his imperial best, yes?
Well, he definitely thinks he is. I mean, he's been talking about showing the Italians that his true value. I still think it's early. You shouldn't take the Paulista League as a measure of real performance. It's good to see him scoring. It's good to see him like out of trouble for a while. But I still want to see him what he might do for São Paulo and the Libertadores and the Brazilian League. I mean, it's a bit too early to say, but there are promising signals that the guy might be getting back to his feet, which not only Brazilians, but everybody in the world would like to see, like a good striker, a guy with a phenomenal left foot, actually doing something good with his life instead of getting into trouble, you know?
Yeah, indeed so. Fernando, listen, you steer clear of trouble there in Partizan Rio de Janeiro, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
The only problem I get here, James, is actually being too much under the sun, man. I miss London, I miss you guys, but
yeah.
I missed your weather.
Fernando, Sochi. We'll speak soon, yeah?
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you, Fernando. Have a lovely one.
Bye-bye.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Fernando Duarte there of All Global and various other places. Hope you enjoyed that, listeners. There's always a bit of controversy about discussing foreign football. For example...
That's not strictly true, is it, James?
What's that then?
There's always a bit of controversy when we discuss MLS, soccer ball league.
Oh, okay, yeah. And a lot of people...
Rubbish. If we want to talk about low-level football played by old has-beens, we could discuss League 2 or something.
Right. Well, we could do it if you wish, but I'm not sure that's entirely fair. But Blue 83 and various other people saying, I hope the MLS coverage doesn't become a regular thing. Although I did enjoy the person, who was it, K2406, who said he likes MLS section, although he doesn't like MLS. He can't be asked about German football, but he loves listening to Rafael Zahn. And Anna says, same goes for Liga and Sid. The pod is an entertainment show about football. What exactly the topic is secondary, as long as it is fun and informative. Hang on. Somebody who shall remain nameless, droning through stuff on a top Southern European league. Anyway.
James, while we're talking about minor leagues, right. Scottish Premier League, Rangers tonight playing Sporting Lisbon in the last 8 years.
Absolutely,
of
absolutely.
No English team got through, not Spurs, not Everton.
Right. I don't think you can call it a minor league.
I don't think we've really.
Super League is a big thing in Portugal.
I think it's two minor leagues actually.
No one yet has said how great it is that Bolton are now deep in relegation mile, because they had a fantastic chance in this season's UEFA Cup to have done something. They should have beaten Lisbon, who weren't up to that much, or Sporting, I think, as we should call them. You'd fancy them perhaps to get through against Rangers. They would have been in the semi-finals. You know, in 20 years' time...
You'd be fancy Bolton to get past Rangers?
Well, 50-50.
Well, I don't know.
Rangers
have had their ups and downs, but they beat Lyon 3-0 in Lyon. Do you think that Bolton would do that?
Well, but then Bolton won it in Madrid against Athletic.
I think Lyon are quite good.
But the point is, I'm really glad that Megson, having basically stuck two fingers up at the UEFA Cup, something that couldn't, the glory game, all for a game against Wigan, which they lost, and then Bolton are now going to go down.
He made a call. It was his job to make a call. He made a call.
Glory,
it was a wrong call.
Not
but
money.
He made a call.
Surely, Jimbo.
Well,
except in your case, obviously.
Where have you been for the last 10 or 15 years, Sean? It's not about glory. It's entirely about
money. But it should be about, if you've got the chance.
I know what it should be about. Yeah.
I am indebted in the meanwhile to our listener who posted in. I know he was, I think, Postmaster General, perhaps, who said, nice one with the USA roundup, who's next? The Thai Football League. And then Aston Melilla. There was a quote about various Thai football names. There's one called Tobacco Monopoly, which is great. And apparently there's another one. If you think a football team called Tobacco Monopoly is strange to Western eyes, how about the Thailand Tobacco Monopoly Hospital, which apparently exists? As he says, take 10 Marlborough and call me in the morning. Astonishing.
While we're on the subject of rubbish leagues, I might as well give a shout out to one of my favourite derbies, which is the match between Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers that's on this Saturday.
Okay.
So go Hoops.
Indeed. And a fair bit of comment as well on our MK Dons controversy with some on Kevin and my side, and some very impassioned, I have to say, fairly well argued post.
It was a disgrace what happened to MK Dons.
Floor Genius and Folklore both.
Oh, sorry, not MK
Folklore
Dons,
says
sorry,
Kevin McCarron may wish to rewrite history, but the facts are plain. I have no beef to grind with Milton Keynes the town, but as Sean points out, if this was an act of altruism to give a town crying out for football their own football club, they could have invested heavily into NK City, the local non-league side who folded due to their theft of my football.
James, when it happens, James, football's a dirty business, always have been. MK Dons are not the repository of all wickedness.
Yes, they are. This yes, is the. Can we just return to this? I know that this is a subject that is so. Oh, it riles me more than Liverpool's defensive attitude at the Emirates.
You're pandering to them. You're pandering to them.
This is a disgrace. This is one of those moments. Yeah. Was it's happened now? But it was one of those watershed moments that is completely going to turn football on its head. I worry for the likes of Millwall, who are sitting on some wonderful real estate there. They've got acres upon acres of land.
Can I ask you a question, Matt?
These clubs are in danger of becoming Norfolk's second.
How long before you're forgiven? You know a lot about Arsenal. When were they forgiven for leaving Woolwich and going to for financial reasons for leaving Woolwich and going to?
I'm afraid I wasn't born then. I can't.
But you're a historian. You know the club's history. How long did they take to get forgiven, or did no one care in those days?
Well, actually, the guy who took them there was the director of Fulham Football Club, so he was a very, very powerful individual. Football association, and I think that although he became latterly very, very unpopular, he was able to brazen it out.
Why is it okay in the past but not in the present?
I think football
because
back then
was a rule. This franchise, there was a lot of deliberating over it, and there was an opportunity to stop that happening, but they allowed it.
Yeah, but it has happened. I mean, it's happened before.
Yes, but that's not the point. But there were rules to prevent. Well, I believe there were rules to prevent it, and they got rid of them. And I think, or at least there was that was a watershed moment where they were thinking about preventing it happening. I can't actually, it's a vague recollection. If they had the opportunity to stop it, God damn it, they should have done.
Should have stopped Arsenal as well, of course.
That happened 70 years ago.
That's my question.
That's my question.
At what time do you say, okay, statute of limitations, it doesn't apply anymore?
Well, if there were rules, and you've told us
you'll hate MK Dons forever. But how long's forever?
until
you're on your deathbed,
yeah,
you'll be in
70 years, will it not be okay then?
No, not at all.
It was the principle of the matter. And I think that when more businessmen take over football clubs and they think that there's going to be more money to be made, and we return to Sean's money point, when there's more money to be made, it's going to be a real problem.
It's been that way.
How long before we have, you know, the Millwall Hoops, the New York Hoops, or the Dublin...
But Sean, you're ignoring the whole history of the game. These kind of things have always happened. But I don't know why you think MK Dons or the Antichrist.
But no, but I just think they should have done it the right way. They should have, invested in MK City and gone up.
I don't blame the MK Dons. I think it's the fault of the football authorities who had the opportunity to shut the
Sean
door.
Does blame MK Dons. Well,
and I blame Koppel, and I blame, Hammam, and I blame all the others that were all the time.
Give us a full
list. Hammam.
I'd like to hear Jimbo's erudite views on this matter.
I was at the MK Dons on Tuesday.
I have to say,
you and your mate Insee.
Me and my mate Insee, we went for a full and frank and revealing discussion that can be seen on Satanta's top.
Did he give you a big
Friday
hug?
Football show.
I think James, if I
he was very. He gives it a little bit that playful, aggressive thing at the start.
Yeah. If I remember,
but I know.
Were you naked?
To see
did you have naked wrestling like in the Ken Loach film or whatever?
Is it going to be?
I think you're thinking of the
London Michael
Women in Love, D.H. Lawrence, which was Ken Russell.
I can imagine you and Insee wrestling on the hearth in front of the.
Oh, can you imagine that too much, Barry? Come on the hoops.
Now you're all imagining it, aren't you?
Come on the hoops. Come on the rug, I think, probably.
It's a bastard to get out of sheepskin as well.
Right, okay. Haven't you got to go to lunch?
On that.
I saw this.
Really shouldn't have raised that against you, should I?
Right. Matt, thank you very much for that, for your participation.
Much.
I enjoy your work a great deal, and it was very special to have you here on board the Football Weekly pod. Thanks a lot. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Matt. And now, on we go. And I think next up it's time to dial up Sid Lowe in Spain. Sid, how are you doing?
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, though? Because you weren't well last time we spoke.
No, I'm still not brilliant. I'm improving slowly, I think. There's some interesting colours coming out of my nose.
Oh, there. That's nice. Yeah. Lots of listeners were saying, get well soon, Sid. And one because they wanted to ask you a question. I'll ask it straight away, shall I? Foxtrot Delta, a question for Sid. A friend of mine recently asserted that the Spanish League owns part of the registration of all the players in the league. This sounds a bit dull, actually, but maybe it's not. This sounds very wide of the mark to me, but is there any truth to it? Briefly.
Well, it depends what you mean, because the truth is that... Yeah, I know, I'm sorry.
Moving on.
Right, OK. Now, let's get your reaction to Barcelona's fine win and much-needed win in Gelsenkirchen when was it? Tuesday night.
Yeah, did you think it was a fine win? I must have...
It was a win. I only saw the highlights, but it was a turgid, horrible game.
What?
Yeah,
okay,
I thought it was awful.
They went away to Gelsenkirchen, they scored a goal, and they held on to the lead this time.
Well, that's true, but Schalke aren't on a good side. Sorry.
Schalke, right, that's the first thing. I think, first of all, Schalke are not a good side. I think, secondly, as well, to be honest with you, my feeling of it watching the game was that it was only the fact that Schalke couldn't finish prevented Barcelona from having yet another game where they'd taken the lead and then put it away. Schalke had three or four good chances without really doing a huge amount. And I thought Barcelona looked a little bit on the ropes in the second half. But then, as you say, it's still a very good result. 1-0 away from home is brilliant. And I just think that at the Camp Nou, Barcelona will be too strong for them.
Right, so they'll probably go through. But from this, it's not like it's any great return to form and that they really have to worry about what happens in the semi-final.
Exactly. And not least because, I mean, Schalke did the things we were talking about before the game. And one of the things about Barcelona is it's also very predictable. When Schalke got aggressive, when they started putting the ball in the air, Barcelona, for the most part, couldn't deal with it. I do think the return of Gabi Milito is very important, and that's one of the reasons why they held on. But they also held on partly because Schalke missed chances.
OK, and Bojan Krcic with yet another goal?
And he is... I mean, the amazing thing about Barcelona at the moment is that they've got this 17-year-old kid, and he's the one they're all clinging on to at the moment. Like, this is the guy that's going to save us. And I think that tells you something about the desperation. There's also a very interesting thing, I think, going on with Bojan, is that I think Barcelona, who are a very political club, at the best of times, as we all know. But there's a kind of realisation among some of the players, I think, that Kirkic is the guy that they have to kind of grab to if they want to continue being kind of onside with the regime. And when you read interviews with players, it's remarkable the extent to which current big-name stars will go to try and prove that they're Bojan's mate. It's absolutely bizarre. And Samuel Eto'o raving about him in an interview that I was reading the other day, and Thierry Henry, who's developed an extremely close relationship with
Bojan. He's missing his daughter, of course, so there must be a bit of a kind of... Sorry. Yeah.
Sid, there's not a big difference in age there.
No. Speaking of Henry, he had another nothing game, didn't he, on Tuesday night?
Yeah, he did, and he has been... I mean, actually, his goal-scoring return's not that bad. I think it's 7 in the league, and he's got a couple of Champions League goals. And he's in that sense, it's not that bad, but his performances are just not the same. He doesn't look quick. He doesn't look quite so dynamic as he did. I mean, obviously, he was very important in the goal, but it was really striking, I thought, that in the celebration of the goal, and admittedly, you know, I'm reluctant to read too much into it, but it did seem to me that in the celebration of the goal, Henry was acting as if somehow it was his goal, and I found that ever so slightly irritating.
Sid, we've been over this before, but does it linger on in Spain, the fact that the medical on Henry clearly was not satisfactory? We all know it was back problem, the wear and tear. Did they really just think that was nothing to worry about?
I think what happens in these situations, and it happened with Jonathan Wood at Real Madrid, and it also happened with Gabby Milito at Real Madrid, but from the other side of the coin, if you like, in that Gabby Milito failed a medical, supposedly because he had a dodgy knee, and he's now played 3 seasons without hardly missing a game since then. But what happens, it's not that the clubs don't take these injuries seriously, and by clubs, I mean the medical staff of clubs, it's that presidents decide that, hang on a minute, I don't care, I'm going for this. And what happened with Jonathan Woodgate, for example, is that the medical staff at Real Madrid, they provided a report to the club, and this report to the club is a report of an advisory nature. It's not a report that says, we are not signing him because, it's a report that says, we should not sign him because. That report gets handed to the president, the president goes, yeah, bollocks, I think I quite fancy signing him anyway.
Sorry, I was watching an extraordinary advert on the TV.
What a compliment to you, Sid.
No, I know exactly what you said, so I'd sign him anyway.
Is there a reason why you've got the TV on in the pod?
I don't know why the TV is on in the pod.
But if we get bored, Sid, we have to have it on.
It's because, Sid, we were able to pick up nuggets of news like Mido is out for the rest of the season. Yeah. How on earth would Middlesbrough cope without him?
The devastation of Teesside.
Is he out for the rest of the season?
Yeah. Do you think anyone will notice?
Apparently he's now so fat he can't fit in the door of the stadium.
And that's a door that's been specially made for Mark Viduka as well.
Well, they put butter around the frame of it and they just wedge him in.
My word, your imagination is on overdrive today, Barry Glendenning. Listen, Sid, on a slightly more serious note, so this weekend you got Mallorca hosting Real Madrid. Is that a difficult game for Madrid?
Well, theoretically it is, because Mallorca are a very strange side. They alternate really brilliant performances with really pretty poor ones. They've drawn, I think it's 13 times already this year. They're way ahead of anyone else in terms of draws. They've got some good players going forward. And also Madrid have tended to struggle a little bit in Mallorca. It was a defeat in Mallorca 2-1 a couple of years ago that brought the end of the Florentino Perez era. It was after that in the pouring down rain that Perez walked away and decided, right, well, sod this, I'm out of here. It's not a place where Madrid have traditionally got great results. And I wouldn't be surprised if this one finished as a draw.
Meanwhile, Sevilla hosting Villarreal, which is going to be a very tough test of their ambitions to stay in the top 2-3, no? Villarreal.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's the one really, really difficult game that Villarreal have got between now the season and the end of the season. Now, obviously, you know, teams still will lose games you don't expect. But if you look at the Villarreal's run and you think this is the one game where they might slip up, which the sad thing is, of course, if they were to slip up this weekend and Madrid and Barcelona both win, it pretty much kills their title challenge now, without even allowing them the chance to fight later on. Sevilla at home is still a good side, despite the fact they're still not the team that they were under Juan de Ramos. And they will feel that there's still half a chance of getting a Champions League place, because they're still only 5 points behind Atletico Madrid and Racing Santander.
Meanwhile, Barcelona hosting Getafe, that would, even given their current condition, should still be a home win, yes?
Yeah, I mean, Barcelona at home, for a start, are still too good for the vast, vast majority of sides in Spain. And you've got to remember, of course, as well, that Getafe play Bayern Munich tonight, and then they play Bayern Munich again next week. They were already beaten last weekend, Getafe, for the first time in 10 games. And I think there's a real sense now that the league games are really just kind of preparation for the UEFA Cup and the Copa del Rey, of course, which they're in the final of.
Indeed so. Sid, that's excellent. And we look forward to getting your reaction to it all on Monday, if we may.
Hope so. Yeah, cool.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye, Sid.
Cheers.
Well, that brings us to the end of part two. And in the next part, we're going to be looking forward to the weekend's action. A bit of FA Cup action and lots from the Premier League. See you in a second. Now, amongst all the other excitements that this weekend offers are two
FA Cup semi-finals at Wembley. One featuring West Brom and Portsmouth, and the other Barnsley against Cardiff. Have the Championship side got what it takes to beat Redknapp's men, Kevin, do you think?
Astonishingly, West Brom had a clean sheet the other night. In fact, a goalless draw.
Right.
But they do play in a kind of breezy manner, concede goals, score goals. I don't think that's going to work when you play a team that is better equipped than you are. And unless West Brom can somehow, against the odds, tighten up, Portsmouth should get through.
Right. Barnsley, meanwhile, taking on Cardiff. They could actually get into the final, yet still be relegated. They've lost their last three games. That would be quite an astonishing achievement, wouldn't it?
Well, it would appear they've all taken their eye off the ball in the league because they want to keep themselves fit for Wembley.
Oh, and, good for them.
You know, who could blame them, really? I wouldn't bet against Barnsley.
Oh, okay.
They'd probably get beaten, but I wouldn't bet against them.
Well, okay. Now, on to the Premier League then. Now, Arsenal-Liverpool, we've kind of talked about this. Aston Villa-Bolton. Bolton 4 points from safety. Is this pretty much the last chance for them?
It looks that way, but Aston Villa have something to play for in the sense that they've really kind of lost the place in the past few weeks. And you think at home they'll try and make a stand and actually pull themselves together. The problem for Aston Villa, of course, is the small squad, which has been more and more exposed as the season goes on. And the same at Man City, who have floundered as the same players have run out of steam.
Right, and Man City, of course, hosting Chelsea. Chelsea 5 points off the top, but they're now in second place. How much do you think the Turkey game's going to affect them?
Well, it's actually, apart from anything else, it's quite a long journey from Turkey. Mm-hmm. I don't imagine they're desolate about having been beaten 2-1 in the old days out of regard as a reasonable score in Europe.
Will it not, given, I mean, there is one vision of events at Chelsea or Cobham, which sees Avram Grant as a person whose respect from the players is a fairly fragile thing. If that is the case, and it did seem to be from the way those substitutions played out in the famous game against Arsenal, players seemed to be almost openly disagreeing with him, and then when the victory came around, then fine, they were all shaking his hands. But if that was the case, his inactivity or less than successful substitutions on Wednesday night, how much will that impair his relationship with the squad?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a story about him being called Average Grant, allegedly, by in one paper. Clearly, he's not a kind of inspiring figure as Jose Mourinho was. And let's just say Man City did actually pick themselves up and the players quite fancied a high-profile game against Chelsea. This could be a fairly miserable weekend, but I'm not really sure what to expect from Man City anymore.
No. Well, Fulham-Sunderland, what can we expect from that then, Barry?
I'd say it won't be too pretty. It's pretty much Fulham have to win
right
to have any chance of staying up. You'd have to say a win for Sunderland would pretty much guarantee their safety. They'd be very unlucky to go down if they got another 3 points.
Right.
So all the pressure is on Fulham. Sunderland, they've won two on the bounce. Not good away from home, but it's only Fulham, so they should beat them.
Dangerous words, those. Six games to go, is it now? And 6 points the gap between Fulham and safety. It does look like a tall order. And then on the Sunday, well, also on Saturday, rather, there's Newcastle-Reading, and Newcastle, of course, on fire these days. Wigan-Birmingham. Neither team can afford to relax too much just yet, but they both look a lot more comfortable than they did a week or two ago. Blackburn-Tottenham, which I'm surprised they probably won't even turn up for, those two. Neither of them seem particularly interested in these.
Blackburn are funny in that they seem to go about their business quite industriously, but don't get very, you know, you see one feature a year on Mark Hughes and, oh, look what a good job he's doing. And maybe it's
usually around November, no?
Geographical location, you know. And Spurs have pretty much down tools for the season since winning the Carling Cup. They put up a good show against Chelsea, but apart from that, they've been hopeless. It doesn't matter who wins that game, it really
right.
doesn't.
Okay, well, let's not waste any more time on that. On Sunday, meanwhile, Everton host the now mathematically relegated Derby. Everton, you will recall, are 5 points behind Liverpool in the race for the top four, but are in possession of the mandatory UEFA Cup place. And Middlesbrough, meanwhile, host Man United. Now, when you're talking about Man United slipping up on the way to the title, I guess this is one of the fixtures you really point at and say, Riverside, Borough, great record against the big teams. Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, Middlesbrough, for some reason, do pick themselves up there. And Manchester United, as we were talking about earlier, won't have Vidic. But the title is quite close now for Sir Alex Ferguson. I think the players will feel push on, tie up the league, and then we can concentrate on, you know, in their minds, winning the Champions League. So I think they'll be motivated.
There you go, then. There you go. Well, we'll have a full roundup on the bits that catch our eye in Monday's Football Weekly. But in the meantime, thanks to the now departed Matt Scott and Sean England, I can only hope they enjoy that top level high achievers lunch.
Yes.
And
we'll head off to the canteen, yes, will we, for a sandwich and a cup of tea.
I quite fancy the pot noodles. That's quite
the low achiever lunch.
Yeah. Mm.
Thank you very much for being with us, Kevin McCarra.
My pleasure.
And you too, Barry Glendinning.
My pleasure.
And producer Canby. And also our foreign correspondents, in this case, Sid Lowe and Fernando Duarte. And you, the listener, too, for making the whole thing possible. We'll speak to you next week, so I hope you join us then. For now, from all of us here, bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.